welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And in these final two segments, going to focus a little bit more on the key stories from this week, including news out of that AI sector, DeepSeek. Boy, oh boy, a lot of news around that. How the markets reacted. We'll even touch on some of Trump's tariff, or at least the news around that. Fed, other central banks, and markets that are continuing to do well, individual sectors. Chatting right now with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. Mike, I think we have to start off with the DeepSeek news. We talked a fair bit about it during the week, and Monday, well, a few sectors within the AI sector got hit. The chip makers and the energy sector, both of those got hit the most. Big tech was pretty resilient through it all. But look, the big news being DeepSeek might have come up with an AI model that uses less expensive chips, less energy. Seemed like it could be maybe a turning point for that whole AI trade in terms of efficiency and cost reductions. Maybe just a growing up of that trade too. Mike, let's start off with how you take the action from this week all around AI and the DeepSeek news.
Yeah, it's such an interesting story. I mean, I don't pretend to be a tech expert that knows all the intricacies of how these models work and this, that, and the other, but I can surely watch the markets and see how they respond. And it was wild news to say that, you know, we did for $6 million what other companies are spending hundreds of millions of dollars to do. And then, you know, the various parts of the sort of tech apparatus and even the government come firing back and saying, yeah, well, they probably actually did spend a lot more than that. They're full of it. And by the way, they might have been stealing our stuff to come up with their model anyway. So it's a really interesting story to see how it all sorts out, how much is true, how much is fiction, and so on. But what stands out to me is just, regardless of whether it's 100% true or not, the market surely treated it at first like it was before kind of settling down. So, I don't want to go as far as say this is a canary in a coal mine, this is the needle that pricks the AI bubble, blah, blah, blah. I don't necessarily think that's the case. But what I think is important to know is that as strong as tech has generally been for quite some time, and AI stocks have certainly been the standout performers, what's actually noteworthy is we've seen a shift behind the scenes, kind of a sneaky shift, I call it, in terms of what groups are outperforming and what's doing the best. And it's not tech anymore. It's kind of funny, but if you look, you know, last year, you look at the first half of 2024, something like the IWM, the small cap ETF, was up like 1% when the Qs, yeah, obviously heavily into tech, were up about 20%. But starting in July of last year, we saw kind of a seismic shift where that was one of those weird months where tech tanked and small caps took off. And we kind of tried to retrace some of it. But in the 7 months since then, if you measure market performance from July 1st, 24 through basically this week, small caps are beating tech by 5 percentage points or so if you use the QQQs. And if you look at something like the XLK, the tech ETF, the sector ETF for the S&P, and you compare that to pretty much anything, industrials, financials, real estate, materials, and on, the XLK is going nowhere where all these other sectors are putting up gobs of points. So what's interesting to me is you know, putting this move in all this volatility in tech into context. And when you do that, you come to the conclusion that sneakily behind the scenes, tech has actually been losing its outperformance luster, and you're making more money in other sectors for the first time in a long time. And not just other sectors, other like market cap groups, small caps versus mega caps and so on. So I think that's the bigger story. You know, this Chinese stuff will get a lot of press. DeepSeek will get a lot of press because it's sort of an exciting, sexy story. But if you're like me and your goal is to make as much money in the markets as possible, pay attention to the longer term trend that's going on there, because that's where I think there's some clues as to what's going to happen as the year plays out.
Yeah, such a great point, Mike, that we've seen for really months, like you say, 6 to 7 months, outperformance in other sectors over tech, and even, like you say, subsectors, the small caps and the mid caps, making up the ground on the mega caps. So that is the bigger trend. And we saw that in spades on Monday as well, where most of the markets were just fine. In fact, rallying and most sectors were just fine. But just circling back to the news that hit from DeepSeek, the other area that really was hit besides AI and chips, obviously NVIDIA and Oracle and the semiconductors ETF were hit hard, but energy was affected. There is the largest utility, Constellation Energy, that dropped by over 20%. the small modular reactor stocks, the nuclear stocks that were set to power the AI revolution, dropped by over 25% apiece, three different stocks. So it was kind of some carnage that spilled over into uranium as well. But a lot of people have digested the news over the balance of the week and said, well, wait a minute. We're still going to need a lot of energy. We're still going to need a lot of these developments. So do you think it's one of those situations where it was an overreaction and now people are starting to like think longer term?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's funny because some utilities behaved like tech stocks because they were latching onto the AI trade, right? I mean, you laid out the process. It's we're going to need a lot of computing power. We're going to need a lot of data centers to put that computing power in. We're going to need a lot of power to make sure those data centers have electricity. And by the way, we're going to have to burn more gas and or, you know, build more nuclear reactors to feed the reactors that feed the electricity to the data centers that process or that have the computers that process the AI tech. So it's you know, it's this whole like daisy chain of sectors that are all kind of tied to the same underlying trade. So naturally, when everything goes up on one trade, everything's going to go down when that sort of that daisy chain is reevaluated. But I think all in all, I mean, again, this is probably just a case of taking some of the steam out of the market or taking some of the air out of it without completely deflating it or popping it or whatever. But again, as exciting and you know, future forward as the AI trade is and the story is, I would just counsel investors. And I've done this and I've said it on your show and I've said it in person talking to people and I've said it in my columns. Remember this 2 years ago, even up, you know, until last year, parts of last year, this was a market where, you know, looking elsewhere didn't reward you. You're kind of wasting your time. You could buy a handful of stocks and make a lot of money. And, you know, that was all you had to do. But that's not the case anymore. So you're actually, you know, whereas before being lazy and just looking at a handful of stocks and only focusing on the tech sector rewarded you, that's not happening. That's not the case anymore. And it hasn't been for quite some time. And, you know, I don't think that's a flash in the pan. I think it was a seminal moment for markets from a big picture, long-term trend, what happened in July of 2024. I think when we look back at market history and say, that wasn't just, you know, a flash in the pan where tech got crushed and small caps took off and the outperformance, you know, kind of radically came shifted. I think that was the start of something that's going to be a multi-year trend, or at least through this year and probably next year. So, you know, me personally, I'm looking at these other sectors. Some of the speakers at our events are talking about these other sectors. Ed Yardeni's been all over the financials, for example. My own work kind of in the real estate space suggests that that's a nice turnaround setting up there, the REIT sector and so on, after just a long period of time where it didn't do anything for you, it actually hurt you. So that's, and materials and things like gold. I know we'll talk about that in a bit, miners and so on, opportunities there. So I just say broaden your horizons. You know, tech is great. I don't think tech's going to crash. This isn't, you know, .com 2 or anything like that. We already had that back in 2021 and 2022. This is more a situation where I don't think tech hurts you a lot, but it's not going to give you the kind of performance bump that it had done for so long relative to many other parts of the market.
Okay. So still a lot of different opportunities there, some that you laid out. What about though, just simply still some people, again, that passive investing strategy of just putting your money in the markets? As much as we saw a shock to some sectors on Monday, look, the S&P is still pretty much at all-time highs. So is there still opportunity, even if you might underperform some other sectors or individual stocks, that the market still looks relatively stable to you? Or are you in that camp where people say it's gotten too extended? Look at how far away the S&P is from some key moving averages that it needs a much larger or longer term correction.
Look, I wouldn't be surprised if this first quarter has more volatility than we've seen in a while. I mean, even, you know, in sort of obviously this week alone in tech, you've seen what can happen with stocks like Nvidia and the market overall. But I think that, again, the underlying forces that are driving this, some which are sort of political, economic, less regulation and so on, friendlier tax policy, some of which are, you know, monetary policy arena, the Fed basically moving to the sidelines. They're not really cutting. They'll probably cut, in my opinion, maybe one or two times later in this year. But, you know, they're certainly not going to resume hiking, in my opinion. So the Fed has kind of gone from being, you know, in 22, a very unfriendly factor, and part of last year, a friendly factor, now being kind of a non-factor. And you throw in decent economic growth and policy that's going to favor domestic and growth over international and so on. There's still reasons to expect a pretty solid year for the markets overall. You know, you can always make a valuation case there, but, and I pay attention to valuations, but I need to see a catalyst of something that's going to sort of change the narrative in conjunction with valuation. I don't think markets just sort of collapse on valuation alone. So if my sort of analysis or the way I see the economic and monetary policy and other forces, fiscal policy, you know, unless something kind of changes there, I'm still fairly optimistic for the year. I mean, I don't think, you know, I certainly don't expect another 20% plus year for the S&P. That'd be kind of wild, but solid single digits, put me in that camp.
Well, Mike, when you think about the macroeconomic picture, you look at GDP growth, it's still in the mid twos. You look at inflation, it's not at 5 or 10%. It's not down at 2, but it is in the high twos to low threes, and so it's at a reasonable level. When you look at the job market, the labor markets, they're not falling apart. So I don't really see why the Fed would have any impetus to start cutting like crazy, because the markets are doing fine, like Corey just mentioned. The S&P is up near all-time highs. We still had people calling for an economic contraction, or they're worried about tariffs, they're worried about the Trump administration, but it seems to be pretty vanilla macroeconomic data.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason the Fed cuts once or twice is just because, you know, the rate of inflation has come down and the Fed funds rate is still pretty high above the rate, or not pretty high, actually somewhat above the rate of inflation. So, you know, rates are arguably a little restrictive in a world where, you know, we've gone from, what was it, 6.5%, I think, core inflation at the peak back in the summer of 2022. Now we're at somewhere in the high twos. I mean, it's not two where the Fed wants it, but it's certainly, it's been cut in half. It's been more than cut in half. So when inflation's been more than cut in half, at least the way the Fed looks at it, core inflation, you know, why haven't rates been cut in half? I mean, it's a simplistic kind of silly way to look at it, but it illustrates the point that you don't need the same interest rates that you had when inflation was up at 6%+. When inflation's at, you know, 2.5 to 3. So I think that's why they're going to gradually normalize rates, and it's not going to be something where they rapidly shift to cut, you know, more aggressive cuts unless the economy or the markets fall apart. And that's kind of not what I'm expecting.
So is that what the market's pricing in? How do you see the market positioning when I'm on your page here, Mike, where I think the Fed is actually in a pretty comfortable situation where they can take their time, slowly lower rates to keep up with generally what we're seeing in terms of better economics, and who knows, maybe not goose the markets as much as some people might want them to, but also be able to bring down their rates. Where are the markets positioned right now?
Yeah, while you were asking your question, I was popping over to the CME to look at the most recent FedWatch numbers. I mean, they're not perfect, but they give you a pretty good idea. And right now, the market's pricing it. The highest chance, and these, again, when I say highest chance, it's still only 46%, give or take, which is not extremely high, so that doesn't guarantee it'll happen, but is that the Fed will cut at a 25 at its June meeting, and then the next highest probability cut all the way down at like 33% is December. So the markets are pricing in, you know, arguably 2 25 basis point cuts, one at mid-year, one at year-end. But, you know how this stuff works. All the forecasts get kind of squishier the further out in time you go because things can change. But that doesn't really argue, you know, that's kind of where I was anyway, you know, even before the Fed paused this week and even before the markets kind of priced in. I don't see the Fed being aggressive. I don't see the Fed being an obstacle for the markets. In that situation, as long as growth is okay, earnings are coming in, you know, the Trump stuff turns out to be more bluster than actual action, which, let's be honest, I mean, if that was a lot of what we saw in Trump 1.0 was, you know, this is... Trump will say almost anything. What he'll actually end up doing, if people kind of bend to his will or where he wants them to go, that's another thing entirely. So, and I think the markets kind of sense it. That's why, you know, late when I know we're recording this here on Friday, was yesterday, I think the market, as soon as there was that 25% tariff headline on Mexico and Canada, everything dropped, you know, to negative territory. And then probably 5 minutes later, we gained a lot of that ground back because people are kind of realizing, and sure enough, here's the headline that now it's going to be more like March 1st. What's talk and what's action are two different things.
Yeah, it's a great point, Mike. A lot of bark. We don't know how much bite there's actually going to be, what actual policies get implemented. Do you think there's anything that the Trump administration or that the Fed could do that would be a wild card here? Is there anything that could happen on the geopolitical stage or nations trading with other nations or on the currency front that could upend the apple cart?
You know, again, the geopolitics stuff, the how much pushback you get from some of these trading partners to what Trump says or does, those kinds of things are wild cards. And, you know, I just like I said, if you go back to Trump 1.0, I mean, how many times did we rally 300 points in the Dow because some headline said U.S.-China trade deal reached? And then how many days later did you have, US-China deal off and we lost 300 points. I mean, I think overall volatility, if I can say anything about the whole Trump impact on markets, is that volatility is going to remain more elevated than it would all else being equal. So, and that means to both directions. I think like the VIX actually ends up sort of staying in a slightly higher range in Trump 2.0 just to price in the potential Trump effect, you know? So that, but at the same time, I don't think that means you're going to see VIX 25 or 30 or something. You're just going to be maybe in the mid to high teens versus the low to mid teens. And you're going to have those spikes and those days where, you know, you might have a lousy day because some headline comes out of somewhere. But all in all, it doesn't derail the overall trend.
All right, Mike, let's move over to commodities then. Because, look, I think pretty much all commodities were off to a pretty strong start to start the year. Some commodities have slowed some of that momentum, but something like gold, that continues to be very strong. As we are chatting, gold still right around 2850, that is all-time highs. And even the gold stocks, GDX, just this month is up over 16%. That is after a few tough months to close the week. But gold, man, it's just higher, higher, higher. So what do you make of the precious metals trade right now?
Yeah, I mean, gold here, look, it's been a bull market. I've really been in the bull camp going all the way back to 2018. You know, we had that long stretch where it was like waiting for Godot for gold to you know, after the first leg up of the bull market to resume the second leg. But it's clear we're in that now. And I think that this validates, I mean, all the underlying things driving gold, which are basically less interference from the U.S. dollar going up every day, more Trump-driven volatility, more diversification out of bonds into precious metals from not just central banks, but private funds and so on. All of these things ultimately point in the same direction, and that's to higher gold prices. So I think that, you know, we're, this 3,000 in Q1 in my is kind of where I'm at. My expectation, we hit that 3K number sometime before the first quarter's over, and I think we continue to climb from there. I mean, I always say I'm not like a crypto hater. I don't think it's gold or Bitcoin or gold or crypto. I think they're kind of both being driven on some level by some of the same forces, and I just don't see that big macro trend, the forces that are arguably positive for gold, to change. So it's been a long time coming. I think we hit that 3K level, kind of reevaluate. I don't know where we're going to finish the year, but you know, underlying forces are there. I think things like silver are probably going to play a little catch up, especially if there's a little more optimism about global growth and growth in the U.S. So you might get a little boost in that sort of industrial side of silver. And you know, as far as the base commodities, again, you know, there's still the China effect, and you know, they're not going to be building a new city every month like they were doing for so long during the real estate bubble. But even there, you're getting some stimulus and some other things that kind of argue for at least China not to be a drag on the market when it comes to things like copper and so on. And copper's got the case as sort of being levered to, you know, the energy transition, which even though Trump is certainly not an EV lover and certainly not a new energy lover or whatever, the world ultimately will go that way over time, regardless of what Trump thinks. So, you know, that underlying trend for copper is probably still there as well.
Well, Mike, you mentioned that you could see $3,000 gold in the cards. And a couple of years ago, that might have sounded like a big statement, but we're really pretty close. We're only 150 bucks away from that now. So what does that mean for the gold equities and even to a lesser extent, the silver equities? You mentioned that you were open to those as a theme this year. It's been a long time coming for the gold stocks to finally outperform gold. Sometimes they've been underperforming it or just keeping parity with it. Do you think this is the kind of year where the gold equities could shine?
Well, I'll tell you, just this week, I've seen some nice technical breakouts. I mean, even in something like the GDX, the gold, main gold ETF, had a big gap up and a strong finish on Thursday. And I think some of the individual miners are looking better. So, yeah, I mean, again, if you have things like inflation kind of easing back, certainly versus what we had a couple years ago, where one of the big problems for the miners was just the cost of everything. I mean, the cost of drilling, the cost of hiring, the cost of getting from point A to point B and getting your machinery in the field and processing and all that stuff. I mean, you know, there were a lot of cost issues that were hurting them in terms of the dirty business of getting minerals out of the ground. But if that has kind of eased back, which it certainly has from peak levels, then you've got a lot of leverage to the gold price and silver price for that matter. So I think that, you know, I hate making a bad pun, but I think, yes, it is their time to shine in 2025. So, you know, I would still be longer that sector than I would have been, you know, a couple of years ago. And I think that is going to pay off for people, because this is, this is definitely, in my opinion, a move that will have durability to it and have a duration to it. It's not just going to be kind of a quick thing that ends soon.
Any comments on time frame then, Mike? Because you made the comment that you have been in the bull gold camp since 2018. That makes about 7 years of a bull run here. You can arguably even say that gold's been, well, it has been moving higher ever since the start of 2016. So 8 to 9 years there of where we stand right now. Any historical context of length of time for bull market moves in gold?
I think I would just highlight the fact that we, you know, this has been sort of a two-phase process, and we had a long, long breather of what, 15 months or something, where just, you know, gold and most mining stocks just chopped around sideways in the middle of this bull market. So I'd think it was a lot closer to the end if we never, you know, stopped to gather our breath. And frankly, we stopped to gather our breath for longer than I ever thought possible. So I think that's probably, all else being equal, a thing that leads to this lasting a lot longer. I mean, we did, you know, it wasn't just a one leg up and then, or excuse me, just one leg up that's been strong and strong and strong and never stopped. I mean, throughout the entire length of basically 2021 and 2022, and into 2023, we chopped and all before we started rallying towards the end of 23. So, you know, I'm not so much one of those technicians that looks at charts or point and figure type methodology to say, okay, based on my research, it's going to last 16 and a half months and end at 3,127. I mean, some of that, that's not my forte. It's more to just sort of be a generalist and take the big picture view, and that's own it, still own it, buy it if you don't. And until I see a real reason to say this is exhausted, or I see a blow off top or something like that, you know, steady as she goes.
Well, Mike, just to tie a lot of these themes together on the macroeconomic front, what the Fed is doing with rates, gold, cryptos, we haven't really dove into the dollar, the greenback. It's had a stronger period of time the last 6 to 8 months than a lot of people were expecting. Trump is a guy that really wants a lower dollar, yet it remains sticky high. That's obviously a headwind to a lot of sectors, headwind to a lot of companies, headwind to the commodities. So how are you looking at the dollar setting up for the balance of the year?
Well, I find it interesting that obviously the dollar started rallying at the end of September, early October, when the polling looked like it was really swinging Trump's way. But then earlier in January, we had that sort of peak, and then we give back some of that, and we look to be stalling out and running out of steam. So I think, kind of funny, I think that, you know, you're at the point where you've priced in a lot of the potential positive impact of tariffs on the dollar, and now you're looking at people saying, well, Trump doesn't really want it to get any stronger, so he's going to find some way to weaken this thing or at least keep it stable. So I think the lion's share of the dollar move, in my opinion, is over. I wouldn't be surprised if we kind of roll over, or at least just chop sideways to down for the majority of the year from here. So I don't think the dollar is going to be an obstacle for commodities in general, or gold in particular.
All right, there we have it. Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. One thing to note is the next Money Show coming up in Las Vegas, February 17th to 19th. I'll post a link in the show notes so all of you can learn more about the Money Shows and see who's speaking at the event. Always a wide range of speakers, including our good friend Mike Larson. So please go check out that conference if you are in town or just even want a little time in Vegas. Again, Mike, thank you so much for your time. And everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. We hope you all have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll be back with you on Monday.
Good, guys. Thanks for having me.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.